Sports Hub. Now, Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, and Bob Beers. This is the Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hour number two here on the Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston here with you in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Judd and Bob have taken their leave to head over to TD Garden and get ready for this afternoon's game, but have no fear. We are joined by Ty Anderson of 98.5thesportshub.com. We're going to get to more of your calls here coming up in just a moment at 617-779-0985. Good morning, Ty.
Hey, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. Just another ho-hum five-game winning streak for the Bruins and, you know, waiting for the playoffs to come around. I mean, we were talking to Ray Bourque a few minutes ago, and even he said, you know, if he were a player, he'd just be like, can we get on with this now and start playing the games that matter?
Yeah, there's definitely that kind of feeling, I think, both internally and externally. I think internally they're better at blocking out the noise and realizing there's stuff to do between now and game one, but this is the time of year where I think it really starts to feel that way. I think after this weekend, it's going to get real for them, right? Because you have Tampa and Carolina back to back. Those are games that you can get up for. But after that, I mean, you got Nashville. They've been playing really well late. I should say that. But you have Nashville and Columbus. And then you're like, all right, let's go. Enough. Let's get the playoffs going here.
Well, that's it. You know, look, the game against Montreal on Thursday night, Montreal, you know, for a team that was outclassed, you know, they gave you some competition. They got the blood boiling a little bit, right? They tried to muck it up, and you know, and the Bruins pushed back, and it was good to see. But you know, you maybe needed that in a game like that, right? Where you're playing a team that is long since out of it, has nothing to play for. It's still Boston, Montreal, but Montreal hasn't been Montreal in years. So, you know, given the pushback that they got from the Canadiens is probably good because it helps focus you at some point.
Yeah, I think it's great. You know, anytime you can inject some hate into a game that is lifeless, you know, I think of that Chicago game at the United Center a couple weeks back, and it was just there was no energy in that game, right? Yeah. Like, so when you play bad teams, you hope that something happens that provides a spark to the game. To the players involved. And I thought that Montreal, you know, they did that. It's still these teams barely play now, but that is a somewhat greasy team. And that was a greasy game. And I thought that was great. It's a damn shame that these teams only play three times this year. And it's a shame that the NHL schedule matrix has decided that Boston Montreal is not as important as apparently, you know, Boston Arizona. I would trade every single one of those games for more games with the Canadiens, but the NHL does not feel the same way I feel, apparently.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense to me, but you know, again, schedule makers and Gary Bettman making those decisions. Let's grab some calls while we've got Ty here with us. And we'll start with Frank, the Tank, up first. Hey, Frank.
Hey, gentlemen. Look, I've got to share this quick story with you before I get to my point. You know, Thursday night, I went old school. I had a cooler on my island. I didn't even want to turn around to reach into my fridge to grab beers because I wanted to watch that game. I mean, one time playing Montreal, it's disgusting what the NHL has done. And my six-year-old had to explain to my three-year-old that we don't bother Daddy when they're playing the Habits because Daddy hates them. So, you know, it's... Look, you know, this is what I really wanted to talk about. You know, that game, you felt it. I mean, that white noise that used to be a part of any NHL game 10, 15, 20 years ago. I mean, and a lot of it has to deal with, yes, there is a lack of enforcers in the league. But the rivalries and the hatred, it seems like the NHL it's like trying to phase it out. It's really, really bad for the league with what Judd was saying, you know, to market their sport. For the love of God, the Bruins need to play Montreal. Calgary needs to play Edmonton. You need those rivalries in hockey. And I wish the NHL would be violent again.
Well, you know, again, it's they're trying to sell it to sponsors. They're trying to sell it to, you know, people who aren't necessarily hockey fans, instead of embracing what the game has always been and what a lot of us do love about the game, without, you know, without getting out of hand, obviously. Although I'm sure not all of us even feel that way, but the rivalries are supposed to be a thing, right? That isn't that part of the reason that they want the playoff structure the way that it is? Isn't that part of the reason that they want the divisional structure the way that it is because you're supposed to build up rivalries with these teams. How do you do that if you're only playing three times a year?
Yeah, exactly. I think it flies in the face of their own idea to say, hey, rivalries are important, but you never play your rivals less than you do now. And I think to Frank's point, yeah. Listen, I brought up the Coyotes because in the past 14 months, the Coyotes and the Canadiens have been to Boston the same amount of time. Like they've both been here twice in the last 14 months. That's embarrassing. How can you be a league that has a divisional rival come to your building the same amount of times that a team in the the Western Conference does? Right. That flies in the face of the very idea of a rival. So, and I still think that, listen, Montreal might be terrible. Like they are not a good team. They haven't been a good team for a while now, but it's still hatred. There's still hatred there. There's still that disdain. You know, you go back to 06-07 when both teams were not good. They were not playoff teams. Those games were still, you know, they still had juice. They still had heat. You know, like and so to take that away, I just think it's a bad move for the NHL. But you know, the I guess the silver lining we can take from it is that these teams did find a way to still dislike each other. You know, from Michael Pezzetta to AJ Greer and Mike Hoffman, there was a lot in that game to like. You just wish you had more of it.
I had somebody ask me on Twitter yesterday about the Bruins' schedule finds them going to Montreal to finish out the regular season. And, you know, should we be concerned given, you know, some of the hatred that built up in that game the other night and, you know, the Greer cross check on Hoffman and, you know, and all of that? Should we be concerned about that? I'm of the opinion that the Bruins will find a way to leave about half the team home that night.
Yeah, I imagine that'll look like the game that they had in Toronto to end the year last year, where I believe there was one NHL regular in that lineup. They will find a way to make that happen, I would imagine. Now, how do you do that exactly in terms of, like, who decide who's going to sit? That might be a game where we're seeing top-line center Tomas Nosek. I'm not going to lie to you. So I wouldn't worry too much about that, but, of course, it's always a concern. I mean, listen, that could happen today. You know, if you look at Tampa's bottom six and the way they're playing, hey, you want to set a message, set the tone. It can happen any game between now and game one. It's just you hope that it's not in game 82. And I think the Bruins will do what they can to sort of mitigate that from happening.
Let's go to John in Chelmsford up next. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Once again, guys, I'm calling about the power play. I know I talked to you last time about the power play. The reason for it, I'm a big diehard, and I see a repeat performance. Last year, their power play was one of the best, and it's starting to flounder around this time like it did last year, and we all know what happened. As a fan, I would like to help it if I can. I called last time about putting McAvoy and Lindholm with the perfection line. I really believe it would work. And it was great that you guys had Ray Bourque on. He said it best. Two studs. I mean, when the Bruins need a goal, they're both out there to try to score the goal. They're both out there, and so is the Bergeron line. Why wouldn't you not try that as a power play? And because I really believe, like I said, it would really work.
All right. I'm just going to, because we're a little tight on time, I'm going to go to Ty on that. What is the issue with the power play? I mean, it was 0-for-5 the other night against Montreal. Didn't look particularly good. Why is it with this level of talent, they have not been better?
I think there's a bit of a stubbornness there with feeding David Pastrnak. It feels like 80% of their attempts will go to David Pastrnak for a one-timer. Teams are keying in on him. I think the problem with John's idea is that if you look at that sort of complexion, McAvoy is kind of sort of, he'd be in no man's land if he wanted to do that. They like having McAvoy attack down low. Now, the problem is with David Pastrnak, the success they found with this power play when it has scored of late is David Pastrnak has movement. Where would McAvoy be moving in this scenario? I'm trying to envision that in my head. If you have Martian on the half wall, Bergeron on the bumper, Lindholm running the point and Pastrnak on the elbow. McAvoy's not a net front guy, right? So where are you going to be putting him there? If you look at the second unit with Charlie McAvoy, he really is like a rover. I mean, he's all over the ice. You like that, but I just think the complexion that you want to have, you know, that John wants to have with both Lindholm and McAvoy, and then Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak, I just think there's a little bit too much moving of the configuration of the entire unit. But I think the top unit, I think the biggest problem is that they're a bit stubborn when it comes to their zone entries and their insistence on getting David Pastrnak's one-timer going. You know, that when that power play's clicking, it's got three scoring threats. You know, it's got the point shot, Bergeron on the bumper, and David Pastrnak. Right now, it feels like they're really trying to feed Pastrnak, and it's becoming predictable, I think.
Let's grab one more here before we get to our break. Let's see. John in Detroit is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey.
Good. I just wanted to talk a little bit this morning, and great show, by the way, as always.
Thank you.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about Charlie Coyle, a pride of my hometown of Weymouth, Massachusetts. I think he's been fantastic this year, and I don't think that, you know, necessarily the statistics back up how good he's been. His puck possession is amazing, and I wanted to get your impressions on how you see his line evolving now that Bertuzzi is on the team.
I appreciate it, John. I would agree that Coyle is, I mean, listen, last year, you know, for a good chunk of the season, it felt like Coyle was kind of out of place in the lineup, right? And having been able to, with Krejci back, have him just settle in as that third line center, it's the perfect spot for him. And he's been excellent, really, from start to finish this year.
Oh, he's been unbelievable. And I think it's flown under the radar for a lot of people because they're too busy complaining about the contract, which, by the way, is not that bad. I've never understood the complaining about that contract. $5 million is what good third line centers get, and he's a good third line center. And I think what's really impressed me about Charlie Coyle's game this year is the way they've utilized him. He has become their go-to penalty killing forward. Both he and Tomas Nosek have become their 1-2 up front. And I think there's a tremendous importance within that because it keeps Bergeron and Marchand fresh. The penalty kill has been great. It's been the best in the league pretty much the entire season. And Coyle's faceoff game has been awesome too. You look at what he's put up so far. He's put up 41 points. And that may not, you know, that may not sound super sexy at this point in the year, what we're 60 something games in. But you have to consider that he begins so many of his shifts in the D zone. I believe he has the fourth most defensive zone faceoffs on the team, behind Bergeron, and sort of your guys like, Brandon Carlo, I believe, as well, as on that list. So like they're utilizing him in a defensive checking kind of role. So to put up 41 points, to be a plus 28, he's doing his job. And I think it's kind of flown under the radar this year.
Given, just to follow up on his other part of the question, when they're fully healthy at the forward position, what does that third line look like?
It's Hall, Bertuzzi, and Coyle. I think you look at that, like, you would like that embarrassment of riches, right? You would like to have what Tampa had when they won the Stanley Cup, and it was Gaudreau, Coleman, Gord, and you're like, how do you match this kind of line? Because there's a lot of skill there. There are guys who played in top sixes there, like, and it was you know, it was a matchup nightmare in terms of what they could bring with their speed, their defensive know-how, and a little bit of edge to them. So I think I look at that third line. I mean, that's where you got to go. You don't trade a protected first-round pick to put Tyler Bertuzzi on your fourth line, right? And you're not breaking up the checks, and you're not moving DeBrusk off the first line. So that's where I land on that. If they are fully healthy, it's Taylor Hall, it's Charlie Coyle, and then you move Tyler Bertuzzi to right wing, which he did play a little bit in Detroit. So you're not reinventing his game by having him do that. So I think that's your third line.
Does Frederick end up on the fourth line in that scenario, or does he wind up watching for a few games?
You know, it's interesting, and I don't know if Nick Foligno is ready to go for game one. Like, it'd be great, but I don't know if that's something that they necessarily are going to rush. I think he's a little bit behind Taylor Hall in terms of his recovery. And I say that because Taylor Hall has skated with his teammates yet. We've only seen Nick Foligno skate on his own before practice. That alone indicates he's a little bit behind. So I think that Frederick's going to get the start, and then they're going to monitor Foligno along the way. That the whole thing is with Foligno is once he's in, you don't want to lose him again, sure. Right? Like, they want to make sure he's upright for the entire run. So I think they may be a little bit more patient with Nick Foligno than a Taylor Hall.
Ty Anderson with us from 98.5thesportshub.com. We'll have a few more minutes with him and some more of your calls coming up. 617-779-0985 as we continue here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerot, Bob Beers. The Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show continues on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And now off a turnover, Gallagher left circle, shoots, Swayman squares up, makes the save and holds onto it. Suzuki has it behind the cage, Dock sent it out in front, what a stop by Swayman, the rebound, did the Bruins deny an opportunity from Harvey Pinar? Dock spins, sent it out in front, Swayman, what a stop, he reached back with the left leg and he denied Jonathan Drouin.
Those are the amazing saves of the week presented by UFOS. They've teamed with Jeremy Swayman for Kick Saves for Cancer. UFOS will donate $10 for every save this season to the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, up to $25,000. Learn about their goal of finding a cure at UFOS.com. That's OOFOS.com. Ryan Johnston joined here in this half hour by Ty Anderson of 98.5thesportshub.com, and we're taking your calls as well. Let's grab Morgan and Beverly up next. Morning, Morgan.
Hey, morning, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, Ryan, it's been an absolute joy listening to you in the mornings.
Appreciate
with Tucker and Rich. It's been an absolute blast. I want to co-sign on what Frank said earlier. We need more Montreal-Boston series. Through the radio, you could really hear the buzz. But what I'm really calling about is Jake DeBrusk has, I believe it's four goals or five goals in his last five games, something like that.
He's on a pretty
good streak right now.
Yep.
I'm wondering if he's starting to peak a little bit too soon and we're going to see some sort of flame out in the playoffs, like every Bruins fear, or if he can sustain that.
Well, DeBrusk has always been, Ty, a pretty streaky guy, you know, and he'll go through, you know, three, four, five games. I'm just talking about this year where, you know, there may be no points and then it feels like they come in bunches, but it's nowhere near what it used to be, right? I mean, he's been a lot more consistent, really, since about middle of last year.
Yeah, he's been great ever since they moved him up to the top line there with Bergeron and Marchand. They've really kind of helped him grow. They've helped him, I would say, have a more complete game. You've seen the way that he's been worked into the PK. You've seen the way that they utilize him. There was a sequence in Tuesday's game against Ottawa where they were protecting a one-goal lead late, and they actually put DeBrusk out there for a D-zone shift with Charlie Coyle, which was interesting because that's not something we're used to seeing, right? We're not used to seeing DeBrusk be a guy who's relied upon over, you know, say, Trent Frederick in that scenario. So I found that interesting. With DeBrusk, though, he's got to be skating, right? And he's got to strike early. I think that's a big thing, right? If you go back to last year's first round series with the Hurricanes, DeBrusk is involved in a shorthanded goal in game three. And from once he gets that point, once he got that point, he was a different player, right? So if you're a Bruins fan and you're nervous about that, what you have to be hoping for is that he finds the back of the net or has a nice 2-point night in game one and it gets him going confidence wise. But he is a factor when he's skating, when he's moving his legs, when he's focusing on his game. I think that he can get in his own head. I think that's a real thing for him. But when he brings the game that you saw when he came back from injury, right? The way he carries pucks to the net, the way he gets to those high danger areas. When he does that, he's a highly effective player for this team. And I think having him with Bergeron and Marchand, two guys that are going to encourage him to be like that constantly, I think that'll help his game.
Tom in Jefferson is up next here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to talk briefly about the ESPN and ABC broadcast. And I don't want to be a dead horse too much about how bad their show with Messier and Chelios are, two of the least compelling human beings I've ever seen on television with that nothing of a host. But watching the ABC broadcast, you know, when you're watching a game, you kind of expect the first game that they broadcast of the year. They're working out some technical kinks just like they would on NESN. Totally get it. But having watched a few weekends in a row of the Bruins on ABC, I wonder why they bother to have announcers, because they are completely inaudible over their crowd noise. And if they can't figure out how to mix the audio on a professional broadcast on one of the major networks for one of their flagship sports franchises, I don't know how they can be trusted when they're going to literally have the entire Stanley Cup final broadcast on that network, when they their own top commentators are coming out like Stephen A. Smith saying, you know, the NHL doesn't matter. They seem to have disdain for their own product and for us as customers. And yeah, I'd like to hear your guys' thoughts.
All right, appreciate it. As far as the audio mix, I noticed I was watching some of the college hockey tournament yesterday, and it was, I could barely hear. It was Butch Agross and Colby Cohen were calling the games in Bridgeport yesterday. I couldn't hear them at all. And there was like 12 people in that building. It wasn't like, you know, it was, it's an 18,000 seat building that's overflowing with emotion. It's something to do with their audio mix. Tom's right.
He's not wrong at all. Yeah, there is something weird going on with that. Cause every time the Bruins are on ABC, I tend to get a tweet from somebody, and I'm at the game, so I can't, you know, I can't speak on it, you know, as well as they can. But like, I get tweets every game that's on ABC. Hey, is the crowd really quiet today, or is it the mix? So I always hear it. Yeah. I always hear it, and I have to tell people, no, the crowd is really loud. Like that Bruins Rangers game, that was a good crowd. But on ABC, I imagine you couldn't really hear it much. As for them burying the game, listen, it's easy to watch the entire league. It's easier to watch the entire league than ever before with ESPN Plus, but it's behind ESPN Plus. It's not on TV enough.
Right.
There's been so many times this year where the ESPN has had a chance to put a great game on one of their channels, you know, ESPN, ESPN2, whatever the case may be. And they kick it to their app, which I get. You want people to have the app. But you want to actually put a game that you spent, you know, $500 million or whatever it is to get the rights to. You want to put it on TV, right? Like,
well,
I would imagine.
Well, but you know, that's ESPN's perspective. It's like, okay, they want to drive people to their app because people are paying them for the app. I get that. But from the league's perspective, like you're losing eyeballs because there just aren't as many people streaming those games as are watching them when they're on cable.
Right. And Ryan, there was a game earlier this year that I was shocked wasn't on ESPN. It was early season. It was the Dallas Stars. Jason Robertson was scoring out of his mind, an American star, an Asian American star, which is a rarity in this game, as we all know, something that would grow the game. Looking at, like, Jason Robertson is an electric talent. I love watching him play. And they were playing the Toronto Maple Leafs, which has the other American star, Austin Matthews from Arizona. Why wouldn't you want that game on TV? I get it. Oh, it's Dallas, Toronto. It's not one of the big six. You know, it's not one of the big, the New York franchise or the Boston franchise, original six, whatever. But that is a game that I think would captivate fans if they tuned in, because it's two high flying offenses. It's two American stars, one of whom is a rarity in today's game. Grow the game. Bettman always talks about growing the game. Put it on TV. Put your foot down and say, hey, put this on TV, please. Tell the college basketball to take a night off, and we're going to put this on TV instead. I just can't believe they didn't do that. It's a problem. It's been a problem all year.
All right, Ty, we're going to let you go on that. Appreciate the time, as always. We'll talk to you next Saturday.
Awesome. Sounds good. I'll be here.
Ty Anderson, 98.5, thesportshub.com is with us, and we will talk with Billy Jaffe coming up in the final half hour, talk about some things going on around the league as playoff races continue with about 10 games to go in the regular season for most teams. We'll get to that next here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Sports Hub. From the front office to center ice. This is the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub, Ryan Johnston with you here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. And each week at this time, we go around the NHL. We welcome in our friend Billy Jaffe from Nesson and NHL Network, who joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. And Billy Jaffe is brought to us by the Eastern Hockey Federation, New England's premier youth hockey league with over 400 teams throughout Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, and Connecticut, and four different skill levels. There's a place to play for everyone. Check them out at fedhockey.com. Take your game and the fun of playing hockey to another level and get in the Fed. Good morning, Billy.
RJ, good morning. How are you? Coming to you live from TD Garden. Just got in here. A little scramble mode.
That's all right. It's an afternoon game. You're supposed to be in scramble mode.
Yeah. Right?
That's part of a 1 o'clock face-off. Everybody's trying to shake out the cobwebs a little early today.
I hear you, my friend. I hear you. All good, though. Ready for a fun day.
Just before we get into some of the stuff going on around the league, what are your thoughts about how the Bruins have played of late? They're riding a 5-game winning streak coming into the game today. They have not necessarily been playing the top level of competition, so it can be a little, it could be a little difficult to maybe maintain their focus, but they just keep piling up the W's.
Yeah. But isn't there, Ryan, you've been in the sports world for forever, right? Yeah. Isn't there something to be said for consistency? Now, just because they had two bad games, and by the way, the Detroit game they lost, the third period was pretty good. They just couldn't dig out of the hole. The Chicago game, that was awful. But that happens. It happens to every single team in every sport throughout an entire season. You're going to have one complete clunker. You're just going to. But the consistency factor, wouldn't you agree, is so freaking impressive with what they've been able to do. You bring up maybe not best competition. Minnesota missing some players, but they're a team that's been playing great lately. Ottawa can make life difficult for a lot of teams.
Boston all year long.
Right. And Tampa. Yeah. How about Tampa the other night? They thumped them. And the Bruins shut them down in the third. And that's what you know what? You got to find the little things that say that's real good. And then you also can take the other side and say, hey, those little things need a lot of attention or some attention. The Bruins have had a lot more of, hey, that was pretty darn good that helped lead them to victory than the other. And I just like their consistency factor. I like the intensity against Montreal. We said it on Nesson, RJ. Okay, it wasn't the prettiest game, and the same thing against Ottawa. But their effort was demonstrative. It was real, and that's what you want. You want the intensity level to be up there. You can never. I don't need to tell you this, bud. You can't replicate the intensity of playoff hockey. You just in anything. But at the very least, they've had the last couple of games that have been rocked up, ratcheted up. And I think the building's going to be rocking today. Listen, man, this is going to be – if Tampa, after what they've done their last couple of games, if Tampa isn't fired up, and ready to go out there and play a playoff-style game, I don't know when they're going to be. It'll be good for the Bruins to have to try and match that.
No doubt. That's kind of what the expectation is today. From the Bruins' perspective, do we still anticipate – that maybe some guys may not make that trip to Carolina tomorrow?
I would think Carolina tomorrow, there's going to be, let's say, two guys that won't go.
Right.
All right. I would absolutely expect that. Greer only misses one game, so, he'll be back. Zaboral, he'll be in the lineup, if he's, for tomorrow for sure, for me, for the back-to-back. I would say, RJ, maybe one more. Now, the Bruins, because they've done a good job of, massaging emergency call up versus regular call-ups. I full admission here. I don't know if Lauko is still under emergency recall or if he is under regular recall right now. Let's just assume it's regular. If only because we'll call it worst case scenario, so to speak. That means they still have three of these recalls left. So I think tomorrow you could see somebody coming up, if need be. But, you know, otherwise you've got these back to backs. You and I have talked about it both during the week on TNR and also on your show here on the weekend. We know the other coming two or other back to backs coming up. We're going to see some changes, so to speak, some other things. I was listening to you and Ty before I got in, as I was scrambling in, and I just wonder, just a counter thought, perhaps, you know, that Montreal game on the 13th, that finished the season. Mm-hmm. I actually wonder, RJ, if you see more of a regular lineup. And you know why? Because the Bruins aren't going to start the playoffs until the earliest Monday, the 13th of, I'm sorry, the 17th
right.
of April.
It's either Monday or Tuesday, right? So
right, yeah. Monday or Tuesday, right? And if those guys, let's say you don't bring, you know, six guys or whatever, if they don't play on Thursday, the 14th, we're assuming they're playing the 11th, but that would be at least six, if not 7 days since they played a game. So I wonder if that's too long at that time of year to where you're all of a sudden playing an Islander, a Pitt, or a Florida team that has scratched and clawed their way into, you know, the playoffs. And now you got guys who have been off for almost a week. Right. I wonder. I got to tell you, the Philadelphia game on the 9th, I think that would be a game where you see a lot of different players, but I'm not so sure about the 11th and 13th. It's just something started thinking about.
There's an argument to be made there. I think you're not wrong. I think in the past, I think, you know, we've seen the Bruins at right around that time of year. If they have a long layoff, they've even had basically like an inter squad scrimmage, right? Just even, you know, yes. basically play a game against themselves just to try and replicate game situation because they don't want to take that long a time off.
Yeah, you're right. No, so something to keep an eye on. But yeah, tomorrow, I think at least two, maybe three regulars won't go.
Let's talk about some things going on around the league. I want to ask you about the Colorado Avalanche, who have kind of, you know, if it's possible, maybe flown under the radar for a good chunk of this season. It's just kind of been there. You know, the West hasn't been, you know, nobody's really distinguished themselves. The Avalanche have won 8 out of their last 10. They're only 2 points out of the division lead right now behind Dallas and Minnesota with a game in hand on both of them. Are the Avalanche finding themselves just in time for the postseason?
Absolutely. And I've talked about this for the last couple of weeks, that this team, if or when they get healthy, their big question is Landeskog, if he's going to play at all this year. Significant knee injury, surgery coming back from it, hasn't played yet. They're still hoping that he can come back but by playoffs, but, you know, that's a TBD. But think about this. All the other players that have missed significant time for them this year, Val Nichushkin, Arturi Lehkonen, Kale McCarr have all missed time. Nathan MacKinnon has missed time. And then, you know, their MVP, and he has to be, I would think, a finalist for the MVP this year in the NHL would be Mikko Rantanen. What a year he has had. The Moose is his nickname, and he has 85 points, RJ, in 71 games. I think that this guy has absolutely dragged them into the fight and into the – kept them close all season long. And now they're kind of reaping the rewards for him being such a fantastic player this year. And flying under the radar is hard, I think, as the Stanley Cup champion. But I think because of all their injuries, they've been given a pass. The question was, is would they be able to get enough healthy bodies at the right time to put it together? And they have. My other big question, and we asked this last year about Darcy Kuemper, is Georgiev, you know, the goaltender that they acquired from the Rangers in the offseason, is he good enough to be that just good enough goalie, you know, that lead him to another Stanley Cup run? I think Colorado and Dallas, Vegas, they're up there. I wouldn't want to play LA in the first round, man, in the West. That's the other thing. They play a 1-3-1 neutral zone, and they absolutely suffocate you there. But I do think Colorado, if they're all healthy, when it's all said and done, is the class of the West.
Well, you know, we talked about Colorado winning 8 out of 10. So is Vegas, so is L.A., so is Edmonton. They've all won 8 out of 10 out West.
Edmonton,
so it's like
5 in a row.
You know, suddenly, you know, these teams, again, which have kind of all been – you know, they've all been in the mix here as the season has gone on, but all, you know, here in the last month of the regular season, suddenly everybody gets hot all at the same time.
Yeah. And so all those coaches and GMs are saying to themselves, if you're going to get hot, this is the right time to do it. But you're seeing, I mean, Dallas is, you know, they've still been a little inconsistent, but I like this team. Remember that game a few weeks ago against them? Actually a month ago now. They're big. They're strong. They kind of remind me, albeit with a better goalie than Carolina, RJ. I don't know if they're completely there yet, but they're close. Ryan, I can't figure them out yet. You know, they've got Jack Eichel leading the way. They don't have Mark Stone there. They have Logan Thompson that came back after a long extended injury, but, and then he got hurt again the other night with 6 minutes remaining in the game. They ended up winning still, but I'm not sure if they can win without him. I think he's their bet. I know he's their best chance as a netminder. The team that is really curious to me is LA. Brought them up before. They've won eight out of their last 10. You mentioned 8-0-2. Jonas Korpisalo and the defenseman, Vladislav Gavrikov, the two players they acquired from Columbus at the trade deadline, have really been big pickups for them. And they've really stabilized certain elements for them. Good, great depth on the blue line. And obviously they needed help in net.
Billy, I want to ask you about, I don't know if controversy is necessarily the right word, but we've seen over the course of the past number of weeks, a lot coming out with some teams and the Pride night jerseys. This week it was the Stahl brothers deciding because of their religious beliefs that they're not going to wear Pride jerseys when their team does. We've seen entire teams basically cancel the whole thing because they say that there's, you know, the Blackhawks came out and said, well, they have concerns about their Russian players and the impact that it might have on them if and when they go home. You know, the league put out a statement yesterday just basically saying that they're not aware of any specific, you know, threat or anything like that toward any Russian players regarding this. But this has become now a kind of a point of controversy with something that teams in the league have been trying to expand this hockey is for everyone feeling. But now it's turning into a problem, it feels like, with almost every team that's trying it. So what do you think ultimately becomes of this? And how much is the league going to get involved in some of this, and how much can they do?
Well, first of all, it's a lot of questions, and I don't remember that well anymore. second of all, we've entered into the unknown. This is just my opinion. You asked me how much is the league going to get involved. I don't feel like they're going to get involved that much because I think they would have by now, RJ. Don't you agree? If they were going to do something. And I think they're very cognizant of the Players Association, and everybody's opportunity to express, I guess, what they feel, you know, they need to, they want to, and they're right to, I guess. You know, it's disappointing in my perspective. But, you know, there have been other Russian players that have worn these jerseys, whether it's in years past or even this year. So I'm not Russian. So I don't know if I guess I'm not an expert to speak on this, RJ, but I don't think that it's a real thing and the league says it. But on the other hand, maybe they feel differently because they've experienced differently and I'm not sitting next to them. So I don't know what they've gone through. But everybody, you know, that has decided not to wear them, it's definitely created a storm of things that the league, I'm sure, would prefer not to have because they've been so encouraging and accepting, and it's been so important for them, not just this initiative, but initiatives like this on many different levels and many different causes. And, you know, I do think hockey's for everybody, no matter what, whether we're talking about Pride, whether we're talking about, you know, disabilities, whatever. I think sports are for everybody. But, you know, again, that's my take and that's my belief. And we're starting to see teams, you know, almost call out their other players or call out other teams for not doing it. And so this is becoming, I think it is controversial. I do, RJ. I don't think there's any, you said, I don't know if I want to call it that, but how do you not?
Well, I think that I think part of the issue becomes, you know, we're starting to see this with some of the teams making decisions is I think they're started to worry about, like, creating division in their own locker room. And so
they
take a step back from even holding events like this because they're worried that it's going to divide the room because some players may agree with it and some don't. And then it kind of, you know, it takes away from what the league and what the teams are trying to do in sending that message that we do want to be welcoming of everyone.
Absolutely. And there's no question that, the message has been, I mean, it's gotten so much attention and you know, I guess depending on how your personal beliefs, whether you agree or not, you know, it's not the message that it's not the kind of attention I think that the league ever anticipated for this. And so to me, again, personally, to me, that's disappointing. But, you know, it sounds like a lot of teams have had a lot of meetings about this, RJ.
Yeah. All right, let's get back on the ice before we wrap up. Today, Tampa Bay, tomorrow at Carolina, two playoff teams and two teams that will be a handful if and when the Bruins would see them in the postseason. Give us a little snapshot of where those teams are as we head down the stretch in the regular season.
Well, Tampa is mired in a little bit of a funk right now. Their head coach, Sean Cooper, talked about it, you know, the details in the last couple of games. He basically said, you know, we warned them about what Ottawa's about. You know, and he basically sounded like a parent. You know, they got to learn. They didn't listen. You know, we said stay away from their transition game. And we didn't. And they didn't. And they got burned pretty bad by him the other night. Montreal, they got burned by. So they've had a real up and down season. They're 5-4-1 in their last 10. They've lost their last three. They're good at home. They're average on the road, which you could argue, though, that's okay. Be 500 on the road. They're just one game under 500. But their defense isn't the same, especially without Ryan McDonagh, especially without Jan Ruta, than it has been in years past. They're trying to figure it out. I can't imagine, Ryan, that today they don't come out breathing fire. I can't. And ready, you know, no matter what happens, the play is so-called the right way. They've turned the puck over an awful lot. With all that said, they still got a couple of incredibly special players. Kucherov, another 100-point year. Braden Point is trending to his best year ever. And remember how hurt he was at the end of last year. So they've got a lot of specialness to their game. And then Carolina, we thought was going to put away the Met, and yet they're just 2 points up. Now, they do have two games in hand on New Jersey right now. They've given away a couple of games the last couple of weeks too, but yet then they've gone in and done well against New Jersey. They've got a fun thing going there in Carolina. The big question mark though for me continues to be, do they have enough overall team toughness, you know, team depth toughness when it comes to the playoffs and their goaltending? Who's going to be the goal? It doesn't seem like Anderson or Ranta can stay healthy long enough to say that's our guy.
Yeah, that's not all that important going into the postseason.
Never,
to know who your number one goalie is. No. Billy, we appreciate it as always. We'll talk to you next Saturday.
All right. Yeah. Have a wonderful day and a wonderful week, RJ.
There's Billy Jaffe. You'll see him as part of the Nesson coverage, of course. Bruins and Lightning, 1 o'clock faceoff over at TD Garden. Judd and Bob will have Duncan pregame starting at 12:30. We will be back next Saturday here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. Have a great week.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.